welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Coming up in this hour, crime. Later on, a broadcast of Escape from 1950 called The Sure Thing. But right now, it's Official Detective, heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on November 24th, 1956. Part of their Thursday night lineup at 8, over 2 million people tuned into this broadcast called The Murdered Groom.
Lieutenant John Hogarth, headquarters. About a month ago, a wealthy widow from Oklahoma married a man named Anthony Fowler. Headed for a honeymoon in Europe, the newlyweds, Jenny and Tony Fowler, stopped off in this city and took a room at the St. Elmo Hotel. They spent the evening at the theater and returned to their hotel room shortly after 11 o'clock.
Oh, thank you, Tony, darling. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, but let's not take it so seriously. After all, a young married couple should be gay.
A young married couple? Who are you trying to kid, Jenny?
It's that expression on your face. It's as though you hated me.
Oh, no, no, Jenny, I don't hate you. I don't feel any way at all about you. How could I? Good Lord, you're 25 years older than I am.
Tony, stop it! Stop it! Stop it!
Now, you hear that? You're disturbing the man in the next room. For heaven's sake, keep your voice down.
Listen, darling, I love you. I forgive you for the horrible thing you just said to me.
Now, wait a minute. For heaven's sake, have a glass of water. Here.
Thank you, Tony. When we get to Europe, we'll never mention this. I think you must be very tired.
And get Europe out of your mind. I'm not going.
Not going on our honeymoon?
Honeymoon? Oh, don't be ridiculous. You might as well get it straight, Jenny. I only married you for your money.
Tony!
Oh, but now look what you've done.
I've dropped the water glass. I'm sorry. I better take it up off the floor. You might cut your foot.
Don't do that with your bare hands. You'll cut yourself.
Is that what you really want, Tony? Is money the only thing you want?
That's it. I guess it's plain by this time that I'm pretty much of a louse, huh? Well, you're right, Jenny. I am. I always have been.
What do you want me to do?
Divorce me, of course. And make a nice, fat financial settlement.
There'll be no divorce, Tony. That isn't the way our marriage is going to end.
Oh, Jenny, stop that. Now, look, you've cut your hand. You've got blood all over your blouse.
Oh, that's all right. I'd better put this broken glass in the wastebasket.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, go into the bathroom and clean up. You look terrible.
Yes, I guess I do. I'm sorry. Tony.
Yeah, what?
I meant what I said. Our marriage isn't going to end in divorce.
Hey, Lieutenant. How's for the all-night coffee joint before you head home?
Good idea, Alan. As the commuter says to his wife, I had a hard day at the office.
You and me both. I'll lock the files.
Lieutenant Hogarth. Oh? Which hotel? Was it a shooting? Oh. Yes, the blunt instrument always makes it tougher. Listen, nobody's to leave the hotel till further notice. Got that? Yes, we'll see you. Leaving right away.
Well, Lieutenant?
A murder at the St. Elmo Hotel.
In the hotel room, Hogarth and Allen are continuing their investigation of the murder of Tony Fowler. The body has just been taken from the room, and the detectives are questioning Tony's widow.
Now, Mrs. Fowler, will you tell us exactly what happened here?
I'll do my best, Lieutenant. We just come in from the theater, my husband and I. We talked for a few minutes, and then I started to get ready for bed. I went into the bathroom to bathe and wash out a few things.
Now, while you were in there, did you hear any sounds from this room?
No, sir. You see, the water was running most of the time, so I couldn't have heard.
How long were you in there, Mrs. Fowler?
I'm not sure. 20 minutes, perhaps.
And when you opened the door and came out?
I was in my nightdress and negligee. I saw my husband lying there on the floor.
Take your time.
It was his head that was so horrible. What was it? What was he struck with?
Something heavy and blunt. We haven't found the weapon, but we think it was one of the bedside lamps.
Yes. There were two lamps in here.
So the housekeeper told us. They were a matched pair, heavy metal base with a glass column going up to the bulb.
By the way, we noticed that bandage on your right hand. What happened?
A bandage? Oh, I poured myself some water and accidentally knocked the glass off the table. It shattered on the floor, and when I was picking up the pieces, I cut myself.
And you threw the pieces in this wastebasket?
Yes.
We wondered how this glass got in here.
Well, let's get back to your story, Mrs. Fowler. You came out of the bathroom and saw the body. Then what?
I'm not sure, but I remember screaming, and then a man came running in. He said he was a guest in the adjoining room. He picked up the telephone and told the operator.
How did this man from the next room get in here?
Well, I don't know. He just opened the door, that's all. It must have been unlocked.
If the killer's prints were on the knob, this guy certainly ruined them.
Now, Mrs. Fowler, as you know, the story of your marriage has been in newspapers all over the country. It was considered news for many reasons. Your social prominence, your great wealth, and the rumor that you took a great deal of cash with you on your wedding trip. Is that true? Did you bring a lot of cash?
Of course.
How much?
$175,000.
What?
You had all that in cash?
Yes, Sergeant.
Well, that much money is a strong motive for murder, Mrs. Fowler.
I know, but it wasn't stolen. I made sure of that before you came. It's in a suitcase. Here, in the closet.
Here, let me get that, huh?
Oh, thank you. You may open it if you like.
Yeah, I'd like to see that much money. Holy Hannah. Is this $175,000?
Yes, in thousands, hundreds, and some smaller denominations.
I'm going to have this suitcase put in the hotel vault, Mrs. Fowler.
Very well.
There's another reason why this marriage of yours was considered news. The fact that you were 25 years older than your husband.
That didn't affect our happiness at all. Tony loved me.
And you had no differences? No spats or arguments?
Why, of course not, Lieutenant. Tony worshipped me.
Well, I'm sorry to have upset you. Alan, have Mrs. Fowler move to another room on this floor. I'm sure she'd be more comfortable.
Okay. What about this money?
We'll have to put it in the vault right away.
Well, the motive certainly wasn't robbery, or this suitcase full of dough would be gone.
Could have been robbery. The killer might have gotten scared away before he found the suitcase.
Maybe so.
As soon as we get a chance, I want to question that man in the next room.
Yeah, who is it?
Police officers.
Look, I'm sleeping now. Come back in the morning.
That'll be too late. We're investigating the murder in the room next to yours. Come on, open up.
Okay, wait a second.
Say, I thought you said you were sleeping. How come you got your bag packed and you're wearing your hat and coat, huh?
Okay, so you caught me in a tiny lie.
Say, turn around. I want to get the full light on your face.
That's the trouble, Lieutenant. You know this puss, all right.
I thought so. Mickey Potts.
Yeah, that's me.
Hey, fill me in, will you, Lieutenant?
Mickey Potts is an old-time thief, Alan. You wouldn't remember him. Where were you going in such a hurry, Potts?
Anywhere, to get away from here. With my record, I knew you cops would be asking me a million questions.
That's right. You got any answers ready?
One's all I need. I don't know who brained that guy in the next room.
Well, tell us what you do know.
Okay. I hear the old dame let out a scream, and then she screams again, and I run in like a dope. Her door's unlocked. I see the stiff on the floor. So I pick up the phone and holler murder. Well, that's the whole story. Go ahead, send me up for life.
Now, don't be impatient. Maybe that'll happen later. Now, tell me this. Did you hear anything in there before Mrs. Fowler screamed?
Yeah, I hear somebody sloshing around the bathroom for a long time.
And before that?
Well, before that, I hear the two of them having an argument.
What about?
How do I know? Who listens? Anyways, I knock on the wall to shut them up. Hey, what's your pal looking for?
Don't get upset, Mickey. I'm just having a look around your room to see if you left anything.
Oh, sure. You cops are very good that way. Hey, Lieutenant, one of the bellboys told me about this Mrs. Fowler. He says she's that rich old dame from Oklahoma.
Rich is right. Some coincidence, you having the room right next door, eh?
So help me, that's all it is, a coincidence.
Mm-hmm. Well, you may as well get undressed, Potts. Go to bed.
You mean I gotta stay, huh?
Till further notice. Let's go, Sergeant.
Okay.
Alan, go down to the lobby and see what you can learn from the staff.
Right.
When you're finished, come back up. I'll be questioning the other guests on this floor. I'm sorry to disturb disturb you at this hour, miss, but I'm talking to all the guests on this floor.
Oh, that's okay, Lieutenant. I couldn't sleep anyway. Imagine being this close to a murder.
Your name and home address, please.
Rose Clark. I'm from Madison, Wisconsin.
What are you doing in this city, Miss Clark?
Oh, I came to buy clothes. I do that every year. Say, is the dead man really that Tony Fowler like the maid told me?
Yes. Did you know him?
Me? Gosh, no. But I read about those two in the paper. I was absolutely fascinated. Imagine her being 25 years older.
Yes. Miss Clark, this room of yours is directly across the court from the room where the murder was committed.
I know, Lieutenant. Gives me goosebumps.
From this window, you have a direct view into that room. I was wondering whether you heard anything or saw anything.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I did. But I don't suppose it means anything.
Tell me about it anyway.
Well, it was, maybe 11:30. I was at this window looking up to see if the stars were out. That's when I saw this woman. She was at the window over there throwing something out. When I heard it smash down in the courtyard, I knew it was something made of glass. So maybe it was a whiskey bottle.
Do you think this woman was Mrs. Fowler?
Golly, I wouldn't know. It was too dark. I could just see her outline, that's all. Lieutenant, is it true what the paper said about Mrs. Fowler? Does she really have a suitcase full of money?
Well, Miss Clark, the newspaper said a lot of things that,
Lieutenant, it's me.
Come in, Sergeant.
The maid told me you were in this room. Oh, excuse me, miss.
Certainly.
I think I found the murder weapon, Lieutenant.
Yes?
Somebody reported hearing a crash down in the courtyard around the murder time. I went out just now and looked. It was the lamp, just like you figured.
Anything on it?
Blood, all over the metal base. That's all that's left of the lamp. The glass is in a million pieces, not a chance of any fingerprints.
Is Mrs. Fowler settled in her new room?
Yeah, 907.
I think we'd better talk to her again. Well, thanks a lot, Miss Clark. I hope you can get some sleep now.
I'll try, Lieutenant. Good night.
Now, Mrs. Fowler, let's have the truth about you and your husband.
The truth? What do you mean?
The man who had the room next to yours said he heard you having a loud argument. Told us he had to knock on the wall.
No, he must be wrong.
Mrs. Fowler, I asked for the truth.
All right. Tony and I did disagree. But it wasn't about anything important. It was just about the play we'd seen.
I see. Why did you throw the lamp out the window?
Throw the lamp out of the window? I don't know what you're talking about.
You deny doing it?
Of course.
Now about your hand. Did you really cut it when you were gathering up the pieces of the water glass?
Yes. What are you men trying to do to me?
Get the truth. You weren't straight with us about arguing with your husband before he was killed.
Well, I was ashamed to tell you about that. You suspect me, don't you? You really suspect me of murdering Tony?
If your suitcase full of money were missing, we wouldn't suspect you half as much.
But one of my suitcases is missing.
What?
I didn't know it till they moved me into this room. It was a duplicate of the case with the money in it.
Well, what's in the suitcase you claim is missing?
Well, some of my clothing. Suits, sweaters, and shoes. You don't believe that it's missing.
We'll have to take your word for it.
Well, why should I lie to you?
Maybe to get a burglary motive into the case.
But I'm not lying.
Well, I hope not. All right, Alan, let's get out of here. I imagine Mrs. Fowler would like a little time alone to do some thinking.
Hey, let me alone. Let go of my arm.
Quiet down, Potts. You'll wake everybody in the hotel.
What's the idea, you two cops grabbing me like this?
I told you to go to bed. Instead, we find you walking around the hall. Now, let's get back to your room.
Okay, don't drag me like a drunk. I'm sober and I'm walking.
What's the idea, you prowling around?
I was getting stir-crazy in my room. Just one little thin wall between me and where that guy was murdered. It was spooky. I was getting tense. I had to come out and walk around the hall so I wouldn't flip my wig.
How long you been out of your room, Potts?
About 10, maybe 15 minutes.
Okay, here's your room. Al and I are going to put you to bed.
Look, you cops don't have to come in. I can put myself to bed. I've been doing it for decades.
We're coming in. We want to make sure... Potts, where did that come from?
Where'd what come from, Lieutenant?
The suitcase at the foot of the bed. Open it, Alan.
Hey, that ain't mine.
I'll say it isn't. Mrs. Fowler's, Lieutenant. Her initials are on it.
Duplicate of the one she had the money in.
Yeah, let's see what's in here. Suits. Sweaters. Shoes, just like she said. Well, Potts, start talking.
Hey, look, this was planted on me. It was planted in my room when I was out pacing the hall.
Maybe so. Now, suppose you go to bed and stay there. And don't try to get out of this room because I'm going to have a patrolman stationed outside your door.
Okay, Lieutenant, but this is going to be a night of positive terror.
Alan, we'll go back to headquarters now.
I want you to take this suitcase to the crime lab and have it examined for fingerprints.
Mrs. Fowler.
One moment, please.
You are Mrs. Fowler?
Yes.
My name is Rose Clark. I'm also a guest in the hotel. May I come in and talk to you?
Of course.
I know it's almost 2:30, but I couldn't sleep. And after your terrible tragedy, I'm sure you can't either.
Oh, no, Miss Clark. Of course I can't.
I thought maybe there was some way I could comfort you.
Oh, that's very thoughtful of you. I've just been sitting here thinking of my poor husband.
I know, Mrs. Fowler. I was thinking of Tony myself.
You knew him?
I knew him rather well. You know, I said maybe there was some way I could comfort you. But you could comfort me even more.
How, Miss Clark?
By giving me the suitcase. You heard me. I want that suitcase. The one with the money in it. Where is it?
Are you a thief?
Never mind that. Where is it? Please. Don't scream. You hear me, old woman? Why don't you make a sound? Where is that suitcase full of money?
I haven't got it. Those policemen took it.
You're lying.
It's true. They put it in the hotel vault.
Okay. We'll get it out of the vault. Pick up that phone. Tell the night clerk to get it out of the vault and bring it up here.
No.
Do as I say.
Go and tell that. Please. I can't stand it.
Very few people can. Especially old ones like you. So stop kidding yourself, lady. Get on the phone and tell them to bring that suitcase up here. Come on. Tell them now while you can still talk.
It's 2:30 in the morning at police headquarters. Lieutenant Hogarth comes into his office, bursting with news.
Hold on to your hat, Alan.
Yeah, what cook?
The boys and records identified the prints from the suitcase. They belong to a young woman named Ada Lasker, confidence woman.
Ada Lasker? Don't know her.
You will in a minute. The boys told me that Ada works with a con man named Buck Babson.
That's all.
I got their mugshots out of the files. This is Ada. Recognize her?
Hey, let me... Hey, this is Rose Clark.
The gal in the hotel. Now, here's a shot of her sidekick, Buck Babson. You won't recognize him, though. The only time you saw him, he was dead, with his head bashed in.
You mean Tony Fowler?
Yep. Got his prints from the morgue. Tony Fowler was really Buck Babson.
A con man taking that poor old gal for a dough, huh?
Looks that way. He and the girl were working together, but something went wrong, and he got killed. Let's get back to the hotel. I want to call Rose Clark by her right name and see what happens. See if she's in the bathroom.
Sure. Miss Clark. Not in there, Lieutenant.
Look what I found on the windowsill. Binoculars. Behind the curtain.
She had a direct view with the murder room.
Yes, she must have been watching for some signal.
Her things are still here. Where do you think she went?
Out to make another stab at getting that money. Come on, hurry.
Going to pick up that phone?
No, you can't make me.
Do as I say. Tell them to send that suitcase up here. Okay, Jenny, we'll try something else.
No!
Be quiet.
This woman was torturing me.
She's lying.
You'll be quiet. Alan, stay here with Mrs. Fowler. Phone for a doctor and wait till he comes.
Okay.
I'll talk to this woman outside in the hall. Come on.
Let go of my arm.
I said come on.
Look, you're going to believe that crazy old woman?
Yes.
Why?
Because you're Ada Lasker. You got a criminal record.
You're crazy.
Ada, I've got you cold. Now tell me how Buck Babson died tonight. And don't give me that look. I found out that Tony Fowler was Buck Babson. So how did he die? Did you double-cross him?
You're so smart. Why didn't you tell me?
I'll tell you part of it. You took a room across the court and watched through binoculars. Buck was to give you a signal, but you didn't wait for it. Am I right? Ada, you got to tell it sometime.
Okay, handsome. We did have a plot rigged up. Buck was to signal, and I was to go over. He left the door unlocked. He was to go down to the bar and talk to a lot of people for an alibi.
And you were to kill Mrs. Fowler, take the suitcase full of money, and leave the hotel.
Say, you are smart.
Never mind that. You did double-cross him, didn't you?
For 175 grand? Certainly. Through the glasses, I saw the old girl go into the bathroom. So I went over to the room. When Buck had his back turned, I let him have it with the lamp. He sank right down without knowing what hit him.
Then what?
Well, I threw the lamp out of the window, grabbed his suitcase, and took it back to my room. Only trouble was, it was the wrong suitcase. Had clothes in it instead of money.
So later you planted that suitcase in the room of a certain Mr. Potts.
Yeah. Say, Handsome, are you interested in money?
Definitely.
Well, downstairs in the vault, there's 175 grand in a suitcase. You had it put into that vault, and you can get it out. Can't you?
Sure. What did you have in mind?
Oh, a quick trip somewhere. Just you and me.
Ada, you must be a mind reader.
You mean you were thinking of a trip?
Mm-hmm. Just the two of us.
Well, what do you know? Where to?
Police headquarters.
Huh?
You'll love it there this time of year. Come on, Ada. Let's get going.
Cast, Sergeant Allen was played by Lawson Zerbe, Jenny by Doris Rich, Rose by Kathleen Cordell, and Potts by James Monks. Official Detective is produced and directed by Wynn Wright, written by Albert G. Miller. All names of persons and places used in this program are fictitious. Any resemblance to names of actual persons, living or dead, is coincidental. Jack Irish speaking. This program came from New York.
Official Detective, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 29th, 1956 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. The program had been on the air for 10 years at that point. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. We now bring you Escape with the story The Sure Thing from January 17th, 1950 on CBS.
Tired of the everyday routine? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
Tonight, we escape to a lonely schooner sailing through the hot Caribbean night, carrying a fortune and the heedless passions of reckless men, as John and Gwen Bagney tell it in their exciting tale, The Sure Thing.
Before we hear tonight's story, a brief message from the Ford dealers of America.
Over 140,000 delighted motorists are already driving the new 50 Ford. Test drive it for the new Ford feel, which stamps the 50 Ford as the one fine car in the low price field. Test drive the 50 Ford at your Ford dealers tomorrow.
And now we invite you to Escape.
This way, senor.
Thank you.
If you would please wait in here in the Presidente's office.
Fine.
You understand, senor, I have not the authority to handle the matter myself.
Yes, of course, I understand.
You see, a bank draft of $2 million, it is a matter of such importance. Senor Jose Perez, the Presidente of the bank, he is the only one.
That's perfectly all right. I'll wait for Senor Perez.
Gracias, senor, gracias.
Wait. Yes, I could wait. I'd come this far, I could afford a few more minutes. It was hard to believe. Just a short while ago, I'd been ship doctor on the SS Martina, the gilded ferryboat of the Caribbean. And now, Now I sat back in a comfortable chair and went over the whole thing again in my mind, just the way it happened, from the beginning. We had just cleared the Straits of Yucatan on our way to Havana when the 23-word message came that started the whole thing.
That's the same thing, Doc. SOS latitude 23 north, longitude 85 west, accident case on board schooner Sidon, en route Havana. Urgently need doctor. Can you board us?
That all? No answer as to the type of injury? No,
I don't get it, Doc. She's standing just off to starboard, and they still keep sending the same message.
Lifeboat's ready, Doctor.
Coming.
Got all your gear?
All set. Let's go. As we pulled away from our ship, I could just barely make out the schooner, heeling to a wandering current in the growing dusk. She was a 42-footer, and from her high bow, she sloped away neatly in a sweeping sheer line to a trim square stern, the Sidon. The name seemed to fit her, aloof and aristocratic. As we pulled alongside, a huge, swarthy fellow helped me aboard.
Watch your step. Easy. There you are.
Yeah, thanks. Now, where's the patient?
He's below. What'd you bring the stretcher for?
Who are you?
I'm the owner, Felix O'Rouge. You can't take him off this boat. He's too weak.
I'll decide that. Come on, Olson.
Coming, Doc.
We went below, and in the forward stateroom, I found my patient, an old man, and with him, a girl.
Oh, doctor, thank heaven you're here. He had an accident. He's terribly ill. I've been so worried.
Bad shock. Pulse pretty slow.
You're not going to take him away, are you?
Away? No, I can't.
Easy now. Have you enough oil aboard to reach Havana if the wind doesn't hold?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Olson.
Yeah, Doc?
You go on back. This man is in no condition to be moved.
What about you?
I'll meet the ship in Havana. We ought to be there in some time tomorrow.
Yeah, but the skipper...
I'll take the responsibility.
Okay, you're the doc.
All right, let's have a look here. Easy now. No, don't try to talk. How long has he been this way?
2 days.
2 days?
Doctor, the wound. I'm afraid that...
Yes, it's badly infected. Who did the surgery on him?
Surgery?
Who probed for the bullet?
Bullet? There was no bullet. He was injured splicing a backstay with a marlin spike.
He was what?
You see, he was carrying the marlin spike in his hand when Felix had to come about it, threw him off balance, and he fell.
I've dug out too many bullets not to recognize the kind of mess they make.
It was a marlin spike.
Yes? Well, you can yell marlin spike all the way to Havana, but it isn't going to change my report.
Report? No. No bullet. Marlin spike. Marlin.
Lie back now. This won't hurt.
What? What is it?
Just a hypodermic.
No, dope. I don't want it.
But I've got to probe. You can't take it if you're conscious.
No anesthetic. Only brandy.
Doctor, give him the anesthetic.
Oh, no. You'd like that, wouldn't you, Stephanie?
You're out of your mind. Joseph. I just want to save you the pain and the doctor.
Get in the brandy.
But, doctor...
It's his body. If that's what he wants, that's the way you'll have to have it. Now get the brandy.
Oh, thank you. And, doctor...
Yes?
Send Stephanie away. Don't wander around me.
She went away, but she didn't like it. And I got to work. For the next couple of hours, I was pretty busy. It was well after 10 o'clock when I felt it was safe to leave the old man and go up on deck to catch a smoke. Halfway up the companionway, I ran into Felix on his way down.
Well, Doc, how's the old boy? Is he going to kick off?
I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I think he's going to be all right.
You think? What do you know?
I'm only a doctor. I've done everything I can for him. Hey, wait a minute. Where are you going?
I want to see him. I got to talk to him.
I wouldn't advise him.
Since when are you giving the orders around here?
Since I came aboard. I don't want him disturbed. He needs to rest.
Oh? You got any objections if I get myself a cup of coffee?
No. So long as you stay away from my patient.
Oh, I didn't hear you come up.
You handle the wheel like an old salt.
Oh, I don't know much about it. I just do what Felix tells me. How's Joseph? You've been down there such a long time, I thought that maybe...
That he died?
That's a horrible thing to say. Of course not.
Who is Joseph? Your husband?
No, I'm his secretary.
Oh, then this is a business trip.
In a way. Doctor, what are you getting at?
Did you shoot him?
Why would I shoot him and then call for a doctor out here in the middle of the ocean?
I don't know. And after tomorrow, I won't care. You realize, of course, that my report to the authorities in Havana will be according to my own findings.
I suppose so. I don't imagine that there's any way of changing your mind. Is there, Doctor?
This is a beautiful schooner. Belong to your boss?
Yes.
I wonder, mind if I take the wheel for a while? It's been a long time.
Oh, you know how to sail?
Used to, back in Maine.
All right. Go ahead.
Oh, feels good. She sure handles like a dream. Just as I thought.
What's wrong, Doctor?
Look at that binnacle. We're not headed for Havana. We're headed in the opposite direction. The Sidon was racing along with sails full, but she wasn't sailing due east to Havana. The compass said she was sailing southwest, away from Havana as fast as wind and sail could take her. I laid her on the starboard tack and started to bring her about. The sails bellied out, catching the wind as it shifted across the bow. And then, as they started to fill away, the mainmast boom swung over. Just as I ducked to avoid it, a shot rang out. I put up my hand to steady myself against the main boom, and there in the wood, right where my head would have been if I hadn't ducked, was the bullet. Across the deck, silhouette in the light, the companionway, stood Felix, polishing his gun with a handkerchief.
You shouldn't tack, Doctor, when a man's cleaning his gun.
Cleaning your gun in the dark in the middle of the night?
Yeah, I suppose it is dangerous. I see you don't like our course.
I was under the impression this craft was bound for Havana.
That's right, Doc, we are.
Then why are we sailing southwest?
Southwest?
Well, that's a woman for you. You can't trust her behind the wheel of a car, and no better behind the wheel of a boat.
Oh, no, Felix, you don't blame me for that. I don't know a thing about a course. I did what you told me.
Now, why didn't you do it right?
If I'm so incompetent, maybe you'd better handle it yourself.
Maybe I will.
I didn't know what that game was. The lie, marlin spike, nocturnal gun cleaning, change of course. But one thing was certain. I intended to get to Havana if it was the last thing I ever did. And to make sure it wasn't the last thing, this was one night I wouldn't sleep. I went down to the old man's stateroom where I'd left my bag to get some Benzedrine. While I was there, I checked on him. He was sleeping quietly. He wouldn't need me. I opened the bag, took the tablets, and suddenly my hand stopped in midair. My hypodermic needle, loaded with the anesthetic that Joseph had refused, was gone.
In just a moment, we will return to Escape. But first, a message from the Ford dealers of America.
Already, more than 140,000 new owners know that the 1950 Ford is something really special. We Ford dealers know it. We want you to know it, too. That's why we invite you to test the 50 Ford yourself. From the moment you get behind the wheel, you'll see and feel quality. A finger's touch brings the great new V8 engine quietly to life, no matter how cold the weather. Before you've driven a block, you'll experience the joy of that flashing V8 acceleration and power. You'll know the quietness of quality in the motor and the sound-conditioned body. Your first touch of the brakes, the largest in the low-price field, brings a new feeling of safety and security. And try the worst road you know. See how the midship ride gives you the comfort and roadability of America's most expensive cars. Any Ford dealer will be delighted to arrange a test drive. If you don't know him personally, he's listed in the classified phone book. Call him tomorrow. Before you buy any car at any price, test drive the 50 Ford. It will open your eyes.
And now we return you to the second act of Escape.
Can't you sleep? Are you still worried about the course? See, we're sailing due east.
Very commendable. Mind if I take the wheel a while?
No, I don't mind at all. Keep her due east, Doc. I want to get to Havana.
I watched his truculent broad back as he moved across the deck and disappeared below.
The moon was as bright as day and as reassuring. And then the sail swung out, covering it, throwing the deck into blackness. That's why I didn't realize at first anyone was approaching until I saw the glow of the cigarette. I tensed myself. My hand clutched at something in the cockpit. The wrench. The cigarette moved closer. I waited. The sail bellowed back, and I saw her, full in the moonlight.
I have to talk to you.
Go ahead. Talk.
I'm afraid I haven't been very honest with you.
I'm afraid you haven't.
I lied to you, and I realize now how foolish it was, but... Doctor, I'm afraid of Felix.
Are you trying to tell me it was Felix who shot the old man?
Yes, and he made me lie about it.
Like you lied about the course.
You'll never get to Havana. He's letting you think that you're going there now, but he'll figure out something.
I'm sure he will, if that target practice a few moments ago was any sample.
Oh, he wasn't trying to kill you. Felix wouldn't kill you now, not as long as Joseph needs you.
Well, you're not making sense again. Felix wants me to keep Joseph alive, and yet Felix shot Joseph?
It was just a fit of anger, an argument. Felix has a terrible temper. Why, he'd be a fool to kill Joseph.
Well, what makes Joseph so valuable? Well?
I suppose I should tell you all of it.
It might be a good idea.
I told you the truth about one thing, at least. I am his secretary. Only his name isn't just Joseph. It's Joseph Ingram.
Ingram? No wonder his face was familiar. He's the big aviation tycoon. But Ingram was killed 2 weeks ago. I read it about it in the papers. A transcontinental airliner crashed into a mountain.
That's the luck of Joseph Ingram. We were on our way to Washington. He'd been subpoenaed to have his war contracts investigated. He was guilty of sin, and the public was really worked up about it. He was a cinch to be indicted. And his wife, who'd put up with his selfishness and greed through 20 years of marriage, couldn't take it anymore and left him.
But
we had got off the plane at Albuquerque to answer a wire from his attorney.
But the radio and newspapers obituaried him to death.
I know. That's how things happen for him. Apparently, there was just no record of us leaving the plane, and they only found half of the survivors. Some of those they couldn't identify.
Go on.
Well, when Joseph realized that he was officially dead, he saw the way out. He'd been looking desperately for a chance to disappear, and now he had it. He phoned Felix in Florida to have the sit-in ready, and we took a train down and boarded her there.
I see.
Well, why do you think I'm on this boat? Do you think I wanted to come? Do you think I wanted to leave my whole life behind? I was forced to come. I was the only one who knew that Joseph was still alive. And now you know.
What about Felix?
Felix is Joseph's handyman, so to speak. And Joseph owns Felix, body and soul. Just like he owns everyone who works for him.
And you?
I saw a chance to go further with Joseph than with any other man.
Then maybe the needle isn't meant for Joseph.
Needle? What needle?
The hypodermic needle loaded with anesthetic. It's missing from my bag. And it looks now like it's meant for you.
Oh, no. Oh, no, he can't. He wouldn't...
I'm afraid we'll have to be more realistic.
We?
If you'll forgive the pun. I'm afraid we're both in the same boat. There was desperation in her face. I felt sorry for her. She was in this mess up to her neck and she was afraid. And yet it was good having her beside me there in the cockpit. It was pleasant to be with her. Just the two of us. The moon and the sea. Well, anyway, the hypodermic needle was the farthest thing from my mind when I took her in my arms. And then it happened. I felt the sting of it pierce my flesh. Oh, the needle, you...
What are you talking about?
The needle, you stuck me with it.
Needle? Oh, I'm sorry. It was just my brooch. It's always coming up.
Brooch? Oh, I thought that...
Oh, silly. Here. Fasten it for me, will you, please?
Yes, of course. Well, I dare say
your English is better than my French. You're shaking.
It's that missing hypodermic. It has me rattled. I've got to get it back.
You'll get it back.
Yes, but when? How?
Right now, doctor. Like this.
She used the needle deftly. In one motion, plunged it in my arm. I tried to struggle to my feet. Her face was mocking me. I grabbed for her, but the drug was warm and deadening. And after a blurred moment, I was gone. I could hear them from a long ways off. I came to you slowly, and I lay there listening.
I only did what you told me. You're the one who's bugging
me. They were both standing over me, working on me, doing everything they could to bring me
through. A lot of trouble to use that needle. Now you've spoiled everything. Why did you have to rush things?
You want to know where the money is, don't you?
Well, you haven't found out, and now maybe you won't. If you'd only let Joseph alone, but no, no, you couldn't wait. As soon as the doctor was unconscious, he had to work him over. If Joseph dies now, we'll never find out where he hid it.
It's on his boat, I know that.
Oh, you know.
Didn't hurt him, I just pushed him around a little.
Oh, that stupid temper of yours, that awful impatience. You'd think you could have waited for $2 million.
$2 million. Now it began to make some sense. Now everything made sense. As long as Joseph needed a doctor and wouldn't tell where the money was, we both lived. But if I couldn't keep him alive...
Get on your feet. Doc! Come on, Doc, up on your feet!
Felix, easy!
Since when are you getting so touchy? Come on!
All right, I'm on my feet.
Welcome back, Doc. Now get below. The old man needs you. He's had a relapse. Stephanie, take the wheel. I said get below, Doc.
I'm not in the mood to take orders.
Maybe this will put you in a mood.
He creased my chin with a short jab. My knees buckled. I swung at him and missed. I saw another one coming. This time I ducked and connected with a roundhouse on the side of his head that sent him reeling along the wet, narrow deck. I started after him. Just as the boat came about violently, heeling over with a lee rail under, I wildly grabbed the guy line just in time to see Felix thrown backwards into the sea. I whirled around. The girl had done it, spinning the wheel like crazy. I dashed back to the cockpit, tried to grab it away from her. She fought me like a tiger, but I finally pushed her off right at the boat and barreled out. But Felix was nowhere in sight. We tacked around, searching for him, but it was useless.
It was an accident.
He's gone. You've killed him.
You ought to be glad he's gone.
Why?
Well, it was either you or him.
As your concern touches me.
Besides, we don't need him, don't you see? You know how to handle a boat, and you're a doctor. You can keep Joseph alive until we make him talk. And when we find out where his money is, we can get rid of him.
And sail away into the sunset,
That's
huh?
right. Just you and me.
Yeah. No thanks. I'll play the original hand out in Havana.
I don't think so, Doctor. I'm setting the course now. And if you're interested, I'm a much better shot than Felix. I won't hit the boom.
The gun glittered in the moonlight, and she was smiling at me. And then I wasn't looking at her, but beyond her. First, I wasn't sure. I just sensed the movement, and then I saw him. Joseph Ingram, barefooted and in pajamas, pulling himself painfully up the companionway, forcing his body to make the effort.
Joseph!
You ordered too much, Stephanie. My money and Felix's youth.
Felix is gone. He had an accident.
Yeah, like mine, I suppose. If only you hadn't been so greedy. If only you'd waited, you'd have gotten your share.
Joseph, you're sick.
You are such a little fool, Stephanie. In the heel of my shoe, in my cabin, is a draft on the National Bank of Venezuela for $2 million. Payable to bearer.
So that's where it is. Thank you, Joseph. That's very generous of you.
I wouldn't have believed it if I hadn't been watching. A bullet in the stomach, yet he kept coming at us, lumbering barefooted across the deck like a wounded bear in blue silk pajamas.
Not so easy.
She backed away from him, emptying her gun into him. But he kept coming.
Not so easy!
Joseph! No, Joseph!
Key was at the edge of the deck as he collapsed against her. His heavy arms and a death grip around her like a cartwheel. They spun together over the side into the inky blackness of the sea. $2 million in the heel of a shoe.
It was in the heel of the shoe, all right. I went below and found it. Just a piece of paper that three people had died over. $2 million. Certified backwards and forwards. Payable to bearer. In just a few hours, it would be daylight. I could be in Havana by noon. Back to the Martina. Back to the dispensary. Back to the endless round of seasick pills, hangover remedies, and when I'm lucky, maybe a sprained ankle. Or Venezuela. The choice was simple. There was no risk at all. It was a cinch. A sure thing. It was payable to bear.
Good afternoon, senor. Sorry I have kept you waiting. You presented this bank draft for payment, senor?
Yes. Are you, senor Perez?
That is right. I am president of the bank. This draft, it is quite a large sum.
There's nothing wrong with the draft, is there?
Oh, no, senor. It is in order.
Good.
And you wish us to transfer this money to your bank in the United States?
No. No, as a matter of fact, I wish to open an account here.
Oh, but certainly. Gomez, you will make the arrangement for the senor.
Si, senor Perez, at once.
And now, there is a lady, a countrywoman of yours, waiting to see you. Please to step this way, senor.
To see me? But who?
Oh, Joseph, I've been waiting so long. Senor Perez, is this the man who presented the draft for payment?
Si, senora.
But he isn't. And what has happened to Joseph?
Who?
Joseph Ingram, of course.
Senor Perez, who is this woman?
Senora,
I heard the citizen had come in this morning with only one person aboard, so I rushed right here to the bank. But you've cashed the draft. What have you done? Killed Joseph for it?
Look, madam, I don't know what you're talking about. Just who are you, anyway?
I'm Joseph Ingram's wife.
Mrs. Ingram? Oh, well, then surely you know. He died in that plane crash back in the States.
He didn't, and you know it. Joseph wasn't on that plane. He boarded the Sydney in Florida.
Now, look, madam, all the newspapers...
Joseph and I planned the whole thing. Those highly publicized statements about our divorce were just a cover-up, so nobody would watch or care where I went. He phoned me from Albuquerque when the plane crashed that he'd meet me here with a certified draft.
He was to meet you here.
And I know he would have, if he was still alive. Senor Perez, will you call the police? I accuse this man of murdering my husband.
Si, senora, if you
call
wish...
Call him at once. He must not get away.
I will ring for the guard.
Now, just a minute. I didn't kill him. She killed him.
She?
Stephanie, his secretary.
And where is she?
She's dead. He killed her.
Oh, this doesn't make any sense. Then where is Felix LaRue?
You see, Felix, he was killed when he...
Yes?
You see, it was...
That is the guard, senor, waiting outside the door. Under these circumstances, Venezuelan law requires me to hold up payment on the draft pending investigation. And, senor, it is my duty to turn you over to the police.
Now, look, those people, I had nothing to do with their murders.
Have you any proof, senor? Have you any witnesses?
They were staring at me. They didn't believe me. Of course. No one would ever believe me. And it had looked like such a sure thing. I was trapped on a charge of triple murder. Not $2 million, but triple murder payable to bearer.
In just a moment, a word about next week's exciting story of escape. But first, a message from your local Ford dealer.
More than 140,000 delighted motorists are already driving the new 50 Ford. Here is what J.B. Spurlock, a salesman, says about his 50 Ford.
Anyone who's on the road as much as I am will sure appreciate the relaxing ride of the 50 Ford. You just take the wheel and sail away for hundreds of miles, and you end up almost as fresh as you were when you started. It's not just the comfortable seats alone that are relaxing. It's the quietness of the Ford engine and the fine riding qualities, too. Actually, it feels and holds the road like a much higher-priced car. I wouldn't trade my 50 Ford for anything anywhere near its price class.
We Ford dealers hear comments like that every day. But you don't have to take anyone's word for it. Just test drive the 50 Ford yourself. Look up your nearest Ford dealer in the classified phone directory. Or perhaps you know him personally. He'll gladly arrange a test drive in the 50 Ford. Then you can test drive it for comfort, for power, for safety, and for quietness. Test drive it for the new Ford feel, which stamps the 50 Ford as the one fine car in the low price field. Before you buy any car at any price, test drive the 50 Ford at your Ford dealers tomorrow.
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson. Tonight we have presented The Sure Thing by John and Gwen Bagney. Featured in the cast were Anthony Ross as the Doctor, Jeff Corey as Felix Arouge, Faye Baker as Stephanie, and Ian Wolfe as Joseph Ingram. Also heard were Harry Bartell, Ruth Parrott, Ramsey Hill, and Paul Fries. Special music was arranged and conducted by Del Castillo. Next week...
You are trapped with a lovely but dangerous woman on your own island of paradise. Trapped by overpowering greed for a huge buried treasure. And from the woman and the greed, there is no escape.
Next week, we escape with John and Gwen Bagney's exciting tale of a lost paradise. Treasure Incorporated. Goodbye then until this same time next week, when once again we offer you Escape.
Escape on Tuned to Yesterday from the 17th of January 1950 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeBounier. It's been a pleasure.